I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That's Michael Heck's way of telling me that he's going to do this hour of the show, so I'm just going to disappear into the shadows and let him take over.
I think that's right. I think it's time. You could go to, like, Woodhouse Spa, get one of those, like...
Hey, I'm all in.
You just get those stones, you know, placed on. You know, you could... Don't take this the wrong way, Newell, but you could use a day of beauty, you know?
Yeah, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. As my wife says, you have a face for radio, my friend. You have a face for radio.
but you are mellifluous, yes.
There you go. Absolutely.
The dulcet tones of Newell Norman.
So what's the latest, my friend?
Well, you know, we're watching what's going on out on the west coast of Florida with Milton approaching. And, you know, it's very hard to be a New Orleanian and not to feel empathy and even, you know, some fear for what's happening there. It's a strange storm in that it's going west to east. It's kind of cutting back across the grain. You know, most storms don't go that way. They just had, you know, a big storm 2 weeks ago, right, from Helene, which has left all kinds of junk on the ground. And Tampa Bay, if you kind of look at it on a map, you know, it's kind of a funnel. You got, like, you know, St. Petersburg, you know, on the north, and it just – and so anyway, you know, it's probably not going to be good out there, and I'm just hoping that people have left and that the destruction will be to property, not to people.
You know, you're so right. I mean, it's been difficult for me to bring myself to watch the coverage of it. It just brings back too many memories of Katrina and so many other storms. And when you look at the magnitude of this one, I think it has decreased now. It's back down to a Category 4. It's been up. It's been down. I mean, this has been a little bit of a crazy one for sure, but it looks like it's kind of locked in, and I guess it's going to make landfall. Last I saw, maybe south of Tampa a little bit. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's going a little bit south now, which would be good because it's kind of the Tampa-St. Pete area that's the most densely populated. And, you know, the problem they have out there is that the building code in Florida right now is perfectly good, and the buildings that are built to the new building code should probably do okay, the roofs and the structures. The problem is that they haven't been hit with a storm of this size in over 100 years, since around 1921. And so there are scores of buildings that are grandfathered into the new, you know, the old building code, and so they're either slab on grade or they're not built strong enough or the roofs are not fortified. And that's going to get, you know, that's going to get messy. You know, I was just on a call with a reporter, and he said, well, you know, what should we do as a country dealing with these natural disasters that are increasing in frequency and intensity? And I said, I think we have to be very careful about two things. One is that these events that we call natural disasters are often man-made disasters because we had bad policy that interacted with a natural event. Katrina is an excellent example of that. I mean, you got to remind people, Katrina was a Category 3, and it was fine when it passed, but then the outfall canals became infall canals, and all hell broke loose. If we had engineered correctly like we are today, then what we could see from a Hurricane Francine or even an Ida, there was very little water surge damage because we had it engineered correctly. So the first thing is to understand that these disasters tend to be policy disasters, engineering disasters. You can't just blame Mother Nature. And the second thing is that he said, you know, what can we do to make communities more resilient so that they can get back in business after an event? And I said, I hate that definition of resilience because I think it allows government and the private sector to escape responsibility. Resilience should not be about getting up after you've been knocked down. Resilience should be being strong enough or fast enough so you don't get knocked down in the first place. So it's about building codes. It's about zoning. It's about levees. It's about holding ponds. It's about doing those things so when the inevitable natural event happens, you come through okay in terms of people and property. You got to get to the left side of the disaster curve instead of just trying to brush yourself off and be a tough guy after the event.
And it does it takes a while to get there too, right? You just can't snap your finger and everything is magically done. So I mean, we're going to be facing these storms all the while, but we got to keep moving in that direction that you just described.
You do, and here's the good news. So we just did an analysis. Man, I wish I had it up on my computer right now, but we just did an analysis where we looked at the damage from storms in Louisiana since Katrina. And Katrina, as we know, was historically devastating. You know, thousands died, 2,000 died, $60 billion of damage at least. But then we started making improvements, like the Hurricane Storm Risk Reduction System, right, which we put in for $14, $15 billion. All the state levies that were put in, improved building codes. And so when Ida came, which was actually a bigger storm than Katrina, according to the category, there was a lot of wind damage because it just sat there, and it was almost like tornado damage, particularly in St. Charles and Jefferson. But there was not storm surge damage. We were totally dry in terms of surge. And then now you look at Francine, and Francine came through, and there was basically nothing. And so what that shows you is that although it does take time and a lot of money, you know, you can make improvements that you can see, you know, in a decade. And that's all we can do. We can't snap our fingers. We can't fix insurance overnight either. But if we keep moving in that direction, then we can keep up and we can be in a much better position.
You know, it was interesting. I was reading an article and it was in the Wall Street Journal and it was quoted. I'm trying to put my hands on it right now, but it was folks complaining in Florida about their valuations of their property and the housing market there crumbling in some of the areas. And they were interviewing folks that were talking about, yeah, I think they were living in 3,800, 4,000 square foot homes, and their homeowners was like $1,700. and it had gone up like, it was going up like, I don't know, 400% or something.
Oh, said, poor thing.
Guys, y'all like, yeah. I said, what are you talking about? I mean, you know, it's like, we'll take those numbers any day of the week.
Yeah, I'll take that and double it and happily pay it. Yeah, so, you know, you had an interesting conversation with somebody, a head researcher at one of the biggest insurance companies in the world. And she said, look, we were talking about homeowners insurance and particularly reinsurance, because that's really what drives the insurance market. And she said, Michael, look, don't take this the wrong way. We're not climate deniers. You know, we do think that weather is getting more intense, but we're fundamentally not afraid of the weather. We insure all throughout the Caribbean. She said, what we are afraid of is political instability and bad regulations. She said, if you give us an environment that's stable and has sane laws, then we'll figure out a way to insure it. But it's when we're in a highly litigious environment where we're going to be subject to fraudulent lawsuits, or when the rules change with every 4 years, every administration, we don't know how to price that, so we just bump it up. And I thought that was actually a really good insight. It's not the weather that they're afraid of. It's politicians and lawyers.
Michael, I wanted to get your reaction. I know we have a lot to talk about, but I think this is an important subject. I mean, we're watching Milton, and then, you know, we've seen the complete devastation as a result of Hurricane Helene, and, you know, the FEMA response to it. You know, we have experienced the ups and downs of FEMA many, many times. And sometimes I'm wondering, And I hear the FEMA director right now, Dion Criswell, complaining about misinformation. And I said this yesterday in a monologue. As an effective leader, you tell your story better than anyone. So go to the podium and tell your story. But it's almost as if they're afraid to, because they have to admit that expectations of the public just cannot be met by the federal government, and they don't want to do that. And it's kind of like, well, then if you're not going to do it, then you're going to take all this criticism on the chin and stop complaining about it. Your thoughts?
I agree. There's been, I mean, you know, FEMA in many ways does an incredible job given what they're tasked to do and given the resources that they have. But there has always been a communication challenge, which has always, to me, just felt like a defensiveness, I guess. And you're interpreting this kind of as fear, but I guess those are kind of the same thing. And as a result, right, they don't tell their own story. They don't communicate effectively. And so people fill in the blanks. I mean, a great example of that right now is risk rating 2.0. We originally pushed for risk rating 2.0 because we said we need more information, more granularity, more variables considered when considering flood insurance. So they said, okay, we've done it. But then they gave us back a black box where they have manifestly refused to tell not just me, but like Steve Scalise, Garrett Graves, Troy Carter, Mike Johnson. They won't tell anybody what's inside the black box in terms of the variables and the algorithms that they're using to rate our insurance. So that prevents us from knowing, one, if it's accurate, and two, from understanding how we can improve our insurance costs. It's like if you got your credit score and your credit score went down and they wouldn't tell you why it went down. What do you do with that? And so, and I just think it's that in bureaucracies, particularly government bureaucracies, people are sometimes fearful of being plain and telling the truth. And they feel like there's more penalty to being transparent than there is to clamming up. And I think they're wrong, but that's definitely the culture, and unfortunately seems to be the culture of FEMA historically.
And that's a great point that you're making, because the reality is the underwriting criteria or the, the matrix, however you want to refer to it, it's proprietary if you're in the competition business, right? But they're not.
Well, I was talking.
They're not really competing against anybody.
No, they're not. I was having this conversation with David Marstead, who's since left. He was running flood insurance. He was the former lieutenant governor of Nebraska, so he really didn't think much about floods. And I said, David, I said, if I want to understand, about this, why can't you tell me what's going into the rates? Then he said, an auto insurance company is not going to give you all that information about why your rates are going up or down. They're just going to give you the rates. And I said, David, yeah, that's true, but I didn't use my own taxpayer money to pay for the auto insurance's model. Like, you've used my taxpayer dollars to build this model. I'm pretty sure that I have a constitutional right to understand what's inside it. And after that, the meeting didn't go well. But, right. So let me tell you what we're working on now. This is, I think, pretty exciting stuff. We've decided that we've been talking about it for years, but now with particularly what happened in Asheville with Helene and now, of course, with Milton, that the time is for us to have a conversation about national catastrophic insurance for the country. Something
all
that would
hazards.
Cover all hazards. Because the reason why we couldn't get there before, right, was cross-subsidization. Because people like those crazy Cajuns building down by the water, living in their vacation homes in Floribama, we're not going to pay for them. Well, now every place is getting spanked. And it feels like it's time for some type of Social Security program for catastrophes. It's the only way that we can effectively bank enough money to help communities not just recover, but recover in a way so that they're less vulnerable going forward. Otherwise, we're going to keep playing disaster whack-a-mole.
Well, I mean, and FEMA's taken on more and more responsibility as it relates to what is a natural disaster, right? I mean, from forest fires to mudslides to flooding to, you know, and the list just goes on and on and on and on. Lightning strikes, tornado damage, all of these weather-related events and outcomes. So it begs of an all-hazards approach. For a long time, all of that wasn't in their silo, right?
It wasn't. So, their silo's continuing to grow. Frankly, as an organization, it's just not up to current conditions. It's, NFIP was built in the late 60s. A lot's changed since then, not just in terms of the weather, but in terms of exposure. Because remember, exposure is not just the weather, it's about where and how we build. And when you have a place like Tampa, for example, that has just exploded in terms of population over the past 20 years, building in low-lying areas at the end of a funnel, that's increasing exposure, regardless of the weather. And so I just think that our policy has to catch up with current reality.
You know, it's like here, we're still building on slabs, right? And I oftentimes wonder why we don't increase the base level that we have to build to ensure that we're not going to we don't flood with storms. And we're tearing down homes and we're building right back with a slab, and we're not, and the grade that we've chosen is not working so good in some neighborhoods. And instead of doing that same thing over and over again, why don't we increase it? It will have an incremental increase in the cost of construction, but not that much. And when you think about, the rising cost of risk rating 2.0 and flood insurance, I think you get a return on your investment for building a pier house off the ground. Level, and we call it a day. I mean, I don't know why we don't locally have the political will to just make this decision and move forward.
Well, to some degree we do. So there's something called the Community Rating System (CRS) in NFIP in flood insurance that what this is, but it that rewards communities with lower flood insurance rates if they do build a certain standard or have certain building codes. And we've actually run an analysis on that. And if you include the savings from the damage that did not occur because of CRS, then the NFIP is actually still in a net positive position. It's actually not in deficit if you dynamically score it. And so I think we have to take that approach that, it's going to be slow, it's going to be incremental, but when we're doing new build or when we're doing rebuild, it has to be done in a way that's going to reduce exposure. And so, again, that's a policy issue, right? That's a zoning and policy and building code issue where, if we don't do it right when we have the chance to, that's our fault.
Yeah. And I'm hearing, text saying, as conservatives, national insurance is bad. Well, there's no one else going to insure it. when you're talking about flood insurance, if they were, the commercial insurance carriers would get into this hook, line, and sinker and compete with the government program, right?
That's right. I mean, this is fundamentally, insurance is actually at this point a social good. We need it to be able to live and work in the places we need to be able to live and work. And I get the libertarian argument, but, do folks want us to take away Social Security? Do folks want us to take away the VA, take away Medicare? I mean, you can do these programs in a way that they work, and at some point it is the role of government.
Absolutely. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc., and we have a special guest, Michael.
Special guest, big partner, Davon Barber, who is the President and CEO of the Downtown Development District. I was on the phone with him this morning at 7:45, so it's become that kind of relationship, and Davon's here to tell you all about it.
Davon good morning, Barber, gentlemen. How are you both doing?
Good morning, Davon. Partnering with G&O Inc. and Michael Heck. God bless you, brother. Tell us.
Great partner to have. We're in this together.
Absolutely. I'm just teasing. Let's talk about some of these projects. First off, let me say this. I'm a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan of the Downtown Development District. You guys have done incredible work and continue to do incredible work. And I talk to folks in that area all the time, and they love the connection to your organization, which speaks volumes of your leadership. And you've been great for the city, and we appreciate your efforts.
Thank you so much, Noel. It's very kind. I appreciate that.
So let's talk about a couple of these projects that you're partnering with this guy over there. Project French Doors. Michael and I have talked about this. I love this project. The 100 blocks of the French Quarter, Dauphine, Bourbon, Royal, Chartist, and Decatur, the gateway to the quarter. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, this is a pretty exciting initiative. When you think about this, Canal Street, we've all talked about the importance of Canal Street being a historic corridor, and it very much is the gateway into the French Quarter. We have these, you know, streets that intersect that really provide the entrances into the French Quarter. And we saw this as an opportunity to leverage existing properties to really create, you know, what I describe as these Instagrammable moments. You know, the experience just simply doesn't start and end on Canal Street. It really ends and continues along in those connecting streets. And so this is a beautification effort that involves decorative murals, lighting, and also infrastructure improvements along these blocks. We think there are some great opportunities to really create these moments where visitors just stop and stare, take in the architecture, and also just make enhancements to many of these businesses. You know, the architecture is fantastic. We have a lot of existing infrastructure. Infrastructure doesn't simply need to be utilitarian. It can also be artistic at the same time. And so leveraging some of the existing infrastructure, leveraging some of the architecture to install decorative lighting, we think it really creates an opportunity for a really high-impact visual experience. And so, you know, we've been pounding the pavement, reaching out to property owners, securing their buy-in in terms of allowing us to install murals, working with local artist, world-renowned muralist as well to activate these gateways. So I think it's going to be a pretty magical experience for our visitors, not only for our visitors, but also for existing residents and businesses as well.
What has been the reaction of the property owners? Because I just going to be brutally honest, Davon, some of the signage in those 100 blocks is pretty butt ugly. I mean, it's just, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it may not be their fault, but I mean, it's there.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of property owners are excited about it. You know, fortunately, DDD, we've had a track record of administering a facade improvement grant program for a number of years, and so we've had property owners that can really serve as ambassadors in terms of how funding can help them, you know, make improvements to their building with lighting, decorative improvements. So, you know, the response has been positive. Again, I think everyone recognizes the magnitude of this event with Super Bowl, with hundreds of thousands of visitors descending upon our city, with over 5,000 media outlets in the city. So they see this as an opportunity to step up, and so the response has been positive.
Spanish Plaza, y'all are engaged in an initiative there as well.
We are all over the place, Newell, you know, working alongside our partners with Michael and GNO Inc. You know, with the number of visitors, you know, the Mississippi River, again, great vista of our city, we saw an opportunity here, again, to create an opportunity for people to pause. You know, right now, Spanish Plaza, I would say, is a little underwhelming, and so we've been working with a number of partners at the New Orleans Building Corporation, Rockstep Capital, which is owner of the Riverwalk Outlet Collection, and we came up with an idea to have some installation of a human interactive signage. And so we will be installing some decorative signage there. Again, this provides an opportunity to take pictures for residents, to take pictures, visitors, again, to take in the vistas of the Mississippi River, the properties are along Spanish Plaza. Again, when you think about when you go to a city, you always want to just pause. And we're constantly thinking about how do we create those Instagrammable moments. So when people walk away, you know, they have a memory that's seared in their brain. Like, this was my experience in New Orleans. I got to experience the Mississippi River. Look at this backdrop. We want them to walk away saying, I love New Orleans. And that's really what this signage is all about.
You know, when you think about going up and down the Mississippi, and I've visited a lot, most of the major cities on the Mississippi, you don't really have that a lot in other cities either.
Certainly
is an opportunity for us to exploit, right?
Absolutely. You know, the Mississippi River very much shaped this city, a working river. We're seeing a lot of development along the city as well. And so, you know, given the proximity to many of the activities that will take place at the convention center as well, this is an opportunity to bolster commerce as well. We want people to take advantage of the transportation, the ferry offered by RTA. And so, you know, this will be a magical experience all around.
Now, you guys always have an eye on economic development, and y'all have done some things in that regard as well, right?
We have. You know, for us, we view every visitor in the city as a potential new resident, a new entrepreneur, a new business occupant. That's what this is all about. We want people to walk away saying, hey, you know, I had a fantastic experience in downtown New Orleans. Maybe I should purchase a condo or lease an apartment. Or maybe perhaps someone walked past a vacant space where they saw a decorative lighting in the storefront and said, you know what, this is a place where I need to open our business. And so, you know, for us, that's what economic development is all about. It's pretty simple. It's making sure that people say, I need to live here, I need to work here, I need to open up a business. And so, you know, we take every single visitor seriously. They're not to be taken for granted. We know that can translate into dollars and also continued job growth for our community.
Let us talk, if you would, for a moment about Canal Street revitalization. Michael and I have talked a lot about this, and one of the areas that has always kind of irritated me with lighting and just the cleanliness is that area, you know, within a block to two blocks of the Sanger. And it's just, I mean, that place is just such a beautiful place, you know, and it just, you walk out, you leave it and you walk outside and it's so dark and kind of dingy.
Well, fortunately, there are some good things happening. You know, there is a lot of positive momentum along Canal Street, and particularly, you know, as you move towards, you know, Lakeside Canal Street, you know, there's a lot of happening within the biomedical district. Fortunately, Tulane University has installed decorative lighting on a number of their buildings. DDD recently partnered with the Bio Innovation Institute. They will also be installing decorative lighting on a number of their buildings. And we're also partnering with the city's Parks and Department of Public Works as well to retrofit many of the historic lighting standards along Canal Street. So you will see, you know, the restoration of the historic bases, new lighting going in along the corridor. So really, you know, it's a partnership of public sector as well as private sector. You know, we want to leverage the public investments as well, but also get private owners to take advantage of the programs. And we've seen that consistently. And as I mentioned before, we've had property owners take advantage of our facade improvement grant program to install exterior lighting. So there's a lot of investment coming, particularly around the Sanger Theater.
Do you see in the not too distant future an ability to redevelop that Hard Rock property there?
You know, I think so. We're optimistic. Recently, City Council passed a motion directing the city's planning commission to evaluate prior studies to look at opportunities, again, to enhance development along Canal Street. And so we're looking forward to that process. We will be engaged as a part of that. You know, we've been working alongside the city's planning commission, looking at opportunities to activate the upper floors of some of the vacant buildings along Canal Street. We've also been looking at opportunities for transfer of development rights. And certainly the Hard Rock site, I think, is, you know, in a prime location. It's given the high walkability score of downtown. You know, downtown ranks 96 out of 100. So we're considered a walker's paradise when you think about the proximity of the streetcar transit adjacent to that site. And again, along historic Canal Street, we certainly look forward to the highest and best use development to come.
Yeah. This is going to sound like a weird question, Davon, but I got to ask it. You know, you're involved in a lot of different things. I mean, do you have like a favorite project that you're working on right now?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say
we're going to put you on the spot just a little bit.
You're going to put me on
make
the
you,
spot.
Make you earn your keep there, by.
No, but, you know, I will dive in, Newell. I think one of the projects that I'm most excited about is our work in the bio district. You know, Michael and Gino Inc. work a lot on target industries, and we really see the bio district as an opportunity to continue to diversify our region's economy and create jobs. When you think about the investments of Tulane University, particularly in downtown, where you have the substantial downtown campus and the growth there, the investments coming out of the Bio Innovation Center, the Tulane Innovation Institute, LSU, we really think the biosciences presents an opportunity for continued job growth for and for entrepreneurs, to provide training for individuals with a high school education who can receive a technical training and really have a great career outcome. And so we're very, very excited about the bio district. You know, Eds and Meds leads is a consistent, resilient economic growth strategy. When you look at those communities that have harnessed the power of institutions of higher education, they're thriving. And we think the same type of success is for downtown, particularly in the bio district.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a big upside opportunity for us. Everybody's got their eye on Super Bowl 59. I know you guys have been part of the team in trying to pretty ourselves up. Any other projects that we hadn't talked about already as we ramp up to Super Bowl?
No, I think, you know, it's important that we're focused on the fundamentals, you know, the infrastructure, lighting, tree planting. We're involved in tree plantings as well, you know, protecting the flora in downtown. So we're excited. We're working closely along with the city's Department of Parks and Parkways to install new trees throughout downtown. We'll be beautifying the gateways, new plantings. And so, you know, first impressions matter for many of the people coming returning for Super Bowl. It may be the 10th or 11th, impression as they return for another Super Bowl here in New Orleans. And so we want them to have a stellar experience. At the end of the day, we want people to walk away saying, hey, this was fantastic. I need to move to New Orleans or open up a business in New Orleans.
Got a text here, Davon, wondering if the DDD's ever thought about making Canal Street a pedestrian mall.
That's a great question. We have not necessarily looked at it as a pedestrian-only mall. I think there are opportunities to evaluate that. There are a number of downtowns that have pedestrian-only streets, and so we would certainly need to look at, you know, traffic impacts, the impacts on adjacent development, and so we could look into that.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Davon Barber, President and CEO of the Downtown Development District. Best of luck as we ramp up to Super Bowl 59, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Newell. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks,
Davon. We'll be right back with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. when we return. Stay with us, folks. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. And as much as this pains me, Michael, I have to say that your road closures listing saved me the other day. I checked it before I went downtown. Y'all announced that a certain street right where I was headed was closed. I avoided it. Someone else I know that same day did not listen to you and I. They got caught up in this quagmire of traffic down there. And I said, well, you got to go to the list because he's got it and it's meaningful.
Yeah, well, that's good. And look, things are going to get more dense over the next, you know, couple of months, because we're really in crunch time right now. So I do encourage people two things. One, to go to nolastreets.info, you know, do like Newell did. It's a very simple one page, just lists major closures, so you can avoid that. And then also, if you do see something, say something, you can email us at superbowl@genoinc.org. It's superbowl@genoinc.org, and we're cataloging and acting on all the feedback. So, we're 120. Let me give you the exact number, Newell. Let's see, we are 100. Go to my counter. 123 days, 6 hours, 37 minutes, and 30, 29, 28 seconds from kickoff.
Jay Cicero hates when you do that. You do know that. I was teasing him about it the other day. Absolutely. Michael, we had the governor on earlier in our show at 10 a.m. this morning, and we were talking about this new tax reform package. It's beginning to reveal itself more and more. Any observations on your part?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm of two sides of it. On one hand, the politically safe way to go would be just to, you know, do it incrementally, right? And I think what the governor is saying, and I applaud his courage in saying this, is, that incremental approach is not going to work for us. We're too far behind the eight ball. We've got to kick over the table and reset it. And that's what this is attempting to do. I think the next step is to go through and understand exactly, you know, what is in the plan and what the impacts are going to be, because it now has to go from academic exercise to one that's going to have real-world implications. The challenge that we have is that, you know, for us to be like Texas, we would have to double our property tax, and that's just not going to happen politically. It's just not realistic. So
I don't know that it can happen, though, either, because our structure is so fundamentally different in the way that local and state government operates. So Texas gets to a point because of where they started. Well, we're starting in a whole different stratosphere, right? So it would be it's much harder for us to get to the Texas point, of the end game. And I think folks need to gain a better understanding of that. Yeah, we might have a desire to get there, but it would be fundamentally really, really hard to do so.
It would be. It would be an unwinding of 100 years of structure and policy and incentives and power. And so even somebody that, you know, has majority power in both, you know, the Senate and the House, and is a strong-willed individual like Jeff Landry, that's probably too much. So this is a different approach. It's leaning on sales tax, which is one that kind of has the least organized opposition to it. It still has the exemptions for food and medicine. I think there's going to be some question about all the corporate incentives that are going away, because each of them has a powerful constituency behind them. So I absolutely applaud the effort. It's the beginning stages of it, and we're looking forward to trying to get us to a much better place.
I got one last question on the tax line. Condor Airlines, any idea if they're going to return service to New Orleans?
I loved that flight. Man, you know, their main company went bankrupt. They were bought, I think, by a lot of Polish airlines. Let me check on that and get back. If you can get the email or the cell phone of that question, that viewer, the listener, I'll find out for them, because I need to know also. I took that flight. It was great.
Yeah, they said they miss it, and direct flight into Central Europe was huge. Michael, as always, thank you so much for joining us today. A lot of information provided. We really appreciate that as well, and have a great week.
Thank you, Newell, and to all of our friends in Tampa and Florida, we're here for you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll talk to Michael Glasser, president of Pano, and they're involved in a new initiative. We'll talk about that. And we'll go open lines in the back half of the 12 o'clock hour. We want to hear from you, your reactions to anything we discussed today or anything you want to talk about. So stay with us, 504-260-1870. on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.